Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rambo Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo,
and we have two big guests tonight. We got some big stuff going on. Patrick Walsh, the fighter from The Ultimate Fighter, from the Bridgewater, Massachusetts area, Joe Lauzon territory, that neck of the woods. So we're going to have him on at 9:15, and then we're going to have on Brendan McKee, who has founded a company called Office to Octagon, officetooctagon.org. There, you can check them out. And it's a non-profit fight league, basically, all amateurs. And it's people that get sick of their shit at the office. They go take it out on somebody in the cage. So, very interesting company there, and we're going to talk to him at 8:30. So we have got to cover some ground here pretty quickly. Got a big boxing match over the weekend. Made Freddie Roach. I hate to pile it on Tony, but the choir boy. And, man, Freddie, actually, you could legally and 100% say that boxing to Freddie right now is therapy. So,
when Freddie was training De La Hoya to fight Mayweather, and that's the first time they did that 24/7 feature. And I don't remember him like going down. I think he was training De La Hoya in Puerto Rico, and I remember he was going down there, going to the coffee shop, and then he was going in like one little fitness center to do a training on his own, just working out. You know, what do you call cardio stuff? If you get onto one stair climber, and like, I hate this machine. But I remember they always say about Freddie Roach, and I remember when I met him 2 years ago in Philadelphia. It's like between pictures, when people would come up and talk to him, you know, he'd go for a picture and he was okay. But like between, like when people weren't talking to him, you could see the Parkinson's. He was actually shaking his face and his hand.
And what a number he did on Miguel Cotto. Just totally reinvented the wheel there, I think.
And another thing that main debate going on is how much of Dominic Gibbs was Martinez going in that fight. And watching it, I only caught like highlights of it because I didn't order it live. I remember I was online that night by the time I got home. By the time I got home, the main event was getting close to starting. And so I'm just seeing what people are posting online. And I'm like, I'm just seeing, like, holy shit, big round for Cotto. I've seen this down sometimes. I'm like, and then it's like, Cotto dominating the fight. My team isn't going any minutes. I'm sitting there like, holy shit. And finally, you could tell, even though I wasn't watching it, the fight was all but over. And then the next day, when I watched some of the clips online, the first thing I saw, and I went back and I looked at it objectively, the first thing I saw Martinez doing was moving to his left. Now, for a southpaw fighter against a right-handed fighter, you're taught to move to your right and try to keep your lead foot outside of his lead foot so you can get better levers and better angles for your big left hand. But Martinez is going to his left almost exclusively, and I gave you two trains of thought. One, if you're shooting damage goods and he's having trouble moving to put weight on his one knee. And that's why he's moving the opposite direction. I know that because I was in that boat before. The other train of thought that came up to me was, or I could be wrong, it could be strategy to move away from Cotto's big left hook and try to make him beat you with his right hand. If that was a strategy, here's what it worked too well. Because Martinez was hurt. It's the first left hook they landed. The first left hook, about 30 seconds through the first round, hit Martinez, not even really probably on the chin, but more on the side of the face. And it fucked with his knee. And 3 or 4 seconds later, he's on the canvas. And so people say Martinez is damaged goods and Martinez is legitimate. Yeah, there's a lot of argument to that, and maybe he was damaged goods. He was 39. He's been aging, but not aging well over the last 2 years. But at the same time, there's no
question
that Soto did in there. Soto went good in there and beat him up.
Just like I said, I wouldn't have predicted Martinez to lose like that, but I did say that Freddie Roach borrowed Tom's crystal ball. Tom's on the line right now.
All right. Man, I'm telling you, that I did not see in that way. I mean, Tony, I thought you had it nailed. I mean, the only thing I was prepared to criticize you on is the round. Wow. You know,
the round is the only thing my dad criticized me on, because he said it was going no more than six.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, you know, sometimes you see that phenomenon where someone just gets old overnight. And I don't know, I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen it before where it's all of a sudden, bang, they're an old man.
Yeah. It was funny because last week we were talking about, Matthew Shabahamid and, his legacy. And I remember, I was obviously too young to remember it happening live, but I remember when he was champion of the world. And his first fight with Blake Blackman was with Muhammad Ali. And, Saad got old real fast. And Blackman had that, that real compact, short style, but similar to a Mike Tyson, but he came in off a real hard jab. And he busted Saad up with his jab, and he went down and stopped him. And then he came in, he came up with ladies that fight, maybe he got caught off guard. And then I remember he was, as I was saying the other week, he was training not far, in Montgomery County, and for the rematch. And my dad went to see him. They were watching him train. And my dad said, "Oh, he looks good, he looks sharp." And my dad went down and said, "No, he doesn't." And he goes, "He's going to pull up again." And you could just tell that he aged. He aged in those two fights, and he knew that it was a matter of time for Paulie. Beat him again and beat him bad. That's the case. Sometimes it's the fighters that literally just age overnight.
Well, I'll talk about somebody who aged overnight. Here's a transition for you. Ross Pearson. He aged quite a bit after losing a fight that he won the other day. And multiple controversies thanks to Tom clued me in on another one. Out there in Albuquerque. And this is a fight, Ross Pearson versus Diego Sanchez. Like I said, Diego likes to fight and lead a lot. And he always comes to fight, but he had nothing compared to Pearson. And Dana White's pissed. He said, Diego lost that fight. The judge who judged that fight should never be judging fights again. He never should be judging fights of this caliber. He needs to get back down into the amateurs and really learn how to judge a fight. Wow, that's Dana White.
Yeah, that's really a voice for change. We could see that guy in the next card if they ever go back to Albuquerque. I'm just sort of out of words about this whole thing. You know, week after week, month after month, year after year. You remember when I started doing the show? What was it, about 2 years ago, a little less. Okay. And what was our first controversy then? Pacquiao and Bradley, right? I mean, this is just an ongoing nightmare. I mean, I get the feeling that if, I've been seeing this for decades now, and I get the feeling that if the nanobots and stem cells come and, I'll be 300-400 years old, I'll be saying century after century. I just don't see any end to it. We know what the solution is. We've been through this enough times. I don't need to keep repeating myself. If you're the commissioner, you give Mr. Collins a call on Sunday and say, "Sir, I will see you in my office Monday morning at 10 o'clock sharp." don't be late. And then at that point, we watch the fight together, and it's going to be one of three recommendations. I want to see your most recent eye exam, or maybe you need remedial training somewhere that you don't know anything about judging a fight, or maybe it should be referred to law enforcement for an investigation on it. It's to that extent. The problem is nothing will be done about it. On and on and on and on. I mean, I don't know. I mean to be ranting about it. You think I'd get used to this now. Shows you I'm not very bright. How many decades have I been seeing this? Again and again and again and again. And when fighters put their whole heart and soul into this, they put everything on the line. And to have something like this happen, I mean, at best, Diego may have tried to rally at the end of the first round, but I still had Ross winning it on my card. The next two, it's just impossible. And then you throw in this stuff about the drug testing, that random, of course. It appears that New Mexico is really, I mean, it's just you have to think that state athletic commission is in the running for the most corrupt, and that's saying something. I don't know what else any rational person could think about it.
But we had another situation in another fight. There's a burning question for you, Tom. Have you ever fish hooked anybody in your MMA training?
You know, that really was not illegal in the early days. And I think what started it was back at UFC 6 with Tank Abbott's, I think Tank Abbott was either doing it or then someone was doing it back to him, and John McCarthy kept saying, no biting, Tank, don't bite him. So, it's pretty despicable move.
Well, I guess Misha Tate has come out in defense of her boyfriend, Brian Carraway, who, according to video, I didn't watch that fight myself. But I did see the video clip, even the still picture they got of him pulling this move off, and he basically invented a new choke. It's called the rear naked fish hook.
Yeah.
He ended up getting that rear naked choke right after that.
Yeah, and what Misha say? Anyone complaining about that should be slapped. Why? It's the kind of woman I need in my life. Stand by your man, huh?
Whoa, easy. Anyway, the main event, too, was pretty interesting because that was another rear naked choke got by unconventional means. Probably the smoothest transition from striking to submission that I've ever seen in a fight. Ben Henderson just totally out-strategized Khabilov through the whole fight, and then in the fourth round, about a minute and almost 16 a minute and 16 seconds into the fourth round, he connected with a 1-2 punch, and then boom, he just got his arm around the guy's neck, standing up, brought him to the ground, and that was it. I couldn't believe it.
That was textbook. If you're ever, working with the younger guy, say, here's, you want to see how to combine everything and put it together, here we go, right there.
Yeah, that was like talked about T.J. Dillashaw being a step-dancing Mexican bullfighter. Well, that was snake charm action.
Yeah.
He pulled the flute out, and then he choked the snake before the snake even knew what was going on. He was listening to music. Oh, he did such a good job of that, and I really have never seen anybody do it quicker. One time, I was actually at UFC 78 in Newark, New Jersey, the only UFC event I've ever gone to in person. And Joe Lauzon did that to me. But I don't remember him pulling it off with the strike first. I think he just kind of ran across the cage and jumped on the thing. I don't know if he worked any punches, but he got the rear naked choke standing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only other time I've seen one that smooth, there was a lightweight, Marcus Aurelio, and it was on one of the fight nights, and he landed a beautiful punch combination. I mean, just everything right on the money. Knocked, knocked his opponent down, just jumped right on his back. Just I think it went on about 35 seconds. Just couldn't have been better. Textbook.
Well, we had a lot of action over the weekend. We had a lot. We got a lot of stuff coming up. We got UFC 174. We got major scandalous news with Chael Sonnen now deciding he's going to retire. The latest because of this drug testing deal. Talk about foot and mouth disease. Spoke too soon. Man, a lot of this stuff. They random tested him. Now he's dealing with some stuff. Maybe might be a little sooner he'll have that Dana White role with the UFC because it doesn't look like he's fighting anytime soon. And I know that they keep saying that all these drugs that he had in his system were coming off testosterone replacement therapy, but anytime you have a guy taking fertility drugs, it makes me think of the Manny Ramirez situation, where he was taking a female drug to mask steroid use. So, I don't know. I don't know if that's, they still use the same stuff, but it sounds pretty fishy to me. And now Chael is saying he's going to retire, so that makes it even more concerning, because it's basically surrendering to the fact that he probably can't fight this. He's probably not going to be able to fight in Nevada again for a long time. It's not worth the wait. He doesn't want to fight in Brazil. Who knows? Anyway, other than those two fights we talked about, John Dodson beat up John Moraga by TKO. Got stoppage there. Rafael Dos Anjos beat Jason High by TKO in the second round. Piotr Holman beat Eve Edwards by rear naked choke as well. Brian Caraway won by Sed Fishhook against Eric Perez. Rear naked choke actually was the official cause of the end of the fight. Sergio got onto the winning track there. Sergio Pettis beat Yeltsin Aza by unanimous decision. Lance Norris beat Bobby Volker. Scott Jorgensen beat Danny Martinez, both by unanimous decision. John Tuck beat Jake Lindsay by TKO. Submission due to heel strikes, it says on here. First, I think I've ever heard that. And then Patrick Cummins got back on the card. He's got a win over Roger Narvaez now by TKO. So that's it for that one.
Yeah, as Dana referred to High, he called it that High Kid. Shoved the referee after the stoppage, and he's been cut from the organization.
See you later. You don't push the referee. You take him down if you're knocked out. You can do that, but when you're fully conscious, you push the referee.
Yeah, that was definitely not a good move. You know, not a good move at all. And he apologized, but that's got to be on a short fuse. One other thing about this whole drug testing thing with Jackson's bunch. Did you notice who has just showed up at Jackson's gym?
Oh, yeah, Overeem.
just a coincidence. Just a coincidence, I'm sure. I had to get that in.
We had some boxing over the weekends as well. I want to run through as quick as we can before we get Brendan McKee coming on to talk about Office to Octagon. As Tony Bernard and Tom have already discussed there, we had the Cotto fight. Had some interesting fights on the undercard there. For some reason that page is not loading. So what I do have in front of me is upcoming fights. If you're in Mexico, this is the week for boxing. Be in Mexico because we got a bunch of big cards, a bunch of big names. Herman Marquez, Hernan, H-E-R-N-N, main event here in Chiapas, Mexico. 37-4 with 26 knockouts, fighting McJoe Arroyo, who's 14-0 with 7 knockouts. We also have the interim WBO bantamweight title on the line between Alejandro Hernandez, who's 27-10-2, and Daniel Rosas, who's 17-1-1. And the big name on this card is Jorge Arce, 10-round featherweight fight. He's 63-7-2 with 48 knockouts, and he's fighting Jorge La Sierva, who's 41-9-6 with 27 knockouts. No title on the line there. And it wouldn't be a Mexican fight if you didn't have a Jesus fight. So Jesus Quijada. Two with four knockouts, fighting Emmanuel Lopez, who's 9-1, 9-3 with one knockout. Yep. Humberto Soto fighting in another pick in some place they can't even pronounce in Mexico. He is fighting for the WBC International Silver Welterweight title. Say that 10 times fast. Humberto, 63-8-2 with 35 knockouts. Fighting Wilfredo Welvis, who's 15-1 with 9 knockouts. And Ray Vargas is also on this card. He's 19-0 with 16 knockouts. Fighting Virgil Braun, who's 12-7-1 with 8 knockouts for the WBC Silver Super Bantamweight title. So, pretty interesting card down there in Mexico. I know we've got a couple former guests of ours fighting this weekend. Out in New Jersey, we got Toka Khan Clary, who's undefeated as a pro. I think we got to him right before his pro debut. We had him on. He's 11-0 with eight knockouts. Fighting Jose Haro, who's 8-0 with 6 knockouts. So that's an interesting one there. Main event there is Glenn Tapia, who's 20-1 with 12 knockouts. Keenan Collins, who is 15-8-3 with 10 knockouts. And the big fight card is in Brooklyn. Demetrius Andrade versus Brian Rose. Demetrius is 13 knockouts. Rose is 25-1 with 1 draw and 7 knockouts. We have Ruslan Provodnikov versus Chris Algieri in the main event, for the co-main event. That's the WBO title. What, Tony?
I don't know about you, and if you're a talented kid and you're a decent fighter, you can make the odds enough to provide this review.
And now, by the way, the Andrade Rose fight is the WBO light middleweight title. And we have Sean Monahan, 21-0, fighting Elvir Ariki. He's got 40 wins. Only 6 losses with 20 knockout wins. That's for the WBC Central America's light heavyweight.
I'll say that'll be a nice little statistic for Monahan. He really impressed me on the Pacquiao Bradley undercard. He opened the show on the non-televised portion against a tough kid out of your area, Blitch, Irish Joe McCready. It was Irish Sean Monahan, Irish Joe McCready. And I said, well, I thought the Irish guy's going to win. And Monahan really impressed me. He hit some clear body shots that he could get up in the cheap seat up by the rafters. So he thought up in the crew getting an out instead of the round.
And Heather Hardy, our former guest recently, she's on the card 9-0 with 2 knockouts. Fighting Jackie Trivolino, who's 9-7-3 with 1 knockout. And as we mentioned, that's a historic fight because that's a female fight at the Barclays Center, so all around, that's a great fight for Heather. Then, as if that's not enough, we're down to Annandale, Virginia. Tony Jeter Promotions, or Jenner, I guess you call it. Bobby Gunn Jr. is on that card in a 4-round light middleweight fight. He's 3-0 with 3 knockouts, fighting a guy named David LaPenna, welcoming another fighter to the pro boxing world. It's his debut. So, Bobby's looking to put another one in the win bin there. Alright. We've got to got to get Brendan on the call. He's calling in. Running a little late here with our coverage.
Hello.
Hello, Brendan.
Yeah, this is Brendan McKee. How are you doing? This is Rich.
Rabble Rouse and Rich Burgers.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing?
Great. You're on the line with Tony the Tornado. Keep on with Brendan.
All right, Brendan,
excellent.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
So, Brendan, tell us the concept of this Office to Octagon, how you came up with it, and what you've developed it into here.
Absolutely. So, you know, much like I kind of had a somewhat different route. I played football in college and had the opportunity to play overseas for a year and came back and started a career in finance as a sec lending trader at a really nice firm. And at that point, it just kind of wasn't for me. I put on like 40, 50 pounds. I was at a desk all day. I was eating sandwiches like it was my job. You know, it changed. So I helped begin what's now known as inner-city weightlifting. And during that same time, it's a nonprofit for inner-city youth. During that same time, I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at Kimura in South Boston and Watertown. They have a few branches. And then started, you know, kind of getting into MMA and realized, you know, I need to open it up to friends and colleagues. And that's kind of where it really all started.
Awesome. And so have you had an actual fight?
Yeah, it's a bummer. I fought in the last year's event. I managed the event. I matched the event, you know, logistics, all that. And I ended up fighting in it. I lost in the second round. But I am going to fight again, but I'm going to actually fight in the league and you know, do a proper training camp and go through that whole process without, you know, kind of having to manage the whole thing as well. So I'm looking forward to that. I think, you know, I don't know what card I'll get on, but I'm hoping to fight this fall.
All right. And so I got to make it official here because I haven't told even my co-host here that I am looking to fight on your end of the year event here. I guess it's going to be sometime in September or August.
Whoa.
We're gonna do a Boston team, which I'm really excited about. You know, so guys can, you know, obviously guys are more than welcome to train whatever facility they want, you know, especially in proximity to their home or work. But it's gonna be cool. All the Boston based guys can train together, and we're gonna fight a team of New York guys.
Right. Yeah.
So we're excited about that. So that's going to take place. We're actually going to have it in New York, and we think it's going to be early November.
In New York. Okay.
In New York, yes, sir.
Uh-oh. In Austin, what, Tom? What, Tony?
Oh, they're going down there to whip those Yankees fans.
Yeah. I don't know if to be wearing Red Sox gear around the streets. I could get jumped, but I wear it into the beach. But yeah, I've been saying it on the show for months now that I want to do amateur MMA. I've gotten comfortable elbows while I'm hitting the boxing bag, so I think I'm ready to give it a shot. And why not do it under those conditions where it's charity type event, and it's going to benefit somebody, and you know, if it's not going to count for my record, at least it counts for something, right?
Well, we're excited to have you, man.
I'm excited about it. I'm going to train seriously. I just happened to also do around the August time frame too. So I'm in shape for that.
Rich, is this going to be a light heavyweight? Rich, excuse me, Rich. Is this going to be light heavyweight? You going to get down to 205
yeah.
or? Okay.
I'm definitely going to get down to 205 because right now I'm about between 215 and 220. So, no problem.
Oh, that's good, yeah. No, good.
I'm going to string this out into a little amateur career. I'm definitely, I should try to get down to 185, obviously, because that's probably my optimal weight. That's what I boxed at in college, too, so perfect. Maybe.
Yeah, that's yeah. Once you get to 205, it's like, you know, why not get to 185? You know, it's
right.
just kind of a trend. I see a lot of guys, you know, all right, I'm going to be a heavyweight. Then they get down to 205. I'm going through that now myself. I'm going to hopefully do one of the IBJJF tournaments, you know, toward the end of the summer, and you know, I'd like to do that at the 205 division as opposed to the. You know, the 221 or 226 or whatever it is. So, yeah, that's pretty common. We get a lot. We have a guy this year who's fighting again. He fought last year at 170, and he's going to be at 155 this year.
Awesome.
So, it's pretty cool.
I've seen some motivating people just covering MMA in Massachusetts. I don't go to a lot of events now, but when I lived down there, I used to go to all the stuff down in Plymouth. And, you know, I saw a lot of the local superstars there. Joe Lozon was there every fight. Kenny Florian was almost always there. And just some unbelievable young fighters. And one guy, I think, he was like 45 years old and fighting professional MMA. And looked like he was 20.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it makes you young to some extent, just to train the MMA. Just to be for anything.
There's some really, I think, you know, Massachusetts in particular is very blessed in the whole MMA scene in terms of, you know, obviously the talent that's come out of here, but also just the high level of respect for the sport. You know, I spent, on Tuesday, I was part of the monthly meeting with the commission and, you know, just their whole review process and how they handle things. I mean, we have a very kind of highly regarded, well-respected MMA scene. So, you know, I've been blessed in being able to start this corporate fight league in, you know, in Massachusetts.
All right. So tell us what somebody like me has to go through for the process. I did read some stuff online about you're expected to get up to $5,000. For donations, basically, or else you got to do some work for some organization like community service, right? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So we really, you know, you got to create some sort of, you know, incentives, right? You got to have some goals when someone comes into this. So we ask that someone raise in ticket sales to about $5,000, which isn't really that hard. It adds up quickly, especially because, you know, we host our events at high-end places. It's open bar. The ticket prices are $100, you know, so that includes food, drinks, everything, temperature, space. So, you know, especially, as I'm sure you know, a lot of times fighters will sell well over the ticket because, you know, their family, their colleagues want to see them do this. So first-time fighters, it's a pretty easy sell. But as I can imagine, you know, once it's your fifth, sixth fight, it's a little bit harder to get that there.
Right. Cool. What are the amateur MMA rules in New York? Because I know that, you know, you can't have pro MMA. And I've heard some horror stories about the way they do the commission work down there. I guess they had some guys in New Jersey who couldn't fight because they had, like, Hep C. And they ended up fighting.
Yeah.
So have you guys done any kind of research into the rules and regs down there?
Yeah. So luckily, the commission in Massachusetts is... you know, they're pretty well tied in with the New York Commission. They know them well. So what we're going to propose is that the New York AMI fighters go through the same processes as the Mass fighters. So, you know, we're going to need up-to-date blood work. We're going to require, you know, current physicals. And we'll basically go by like Matt's rules in terms of, you know, no knee or elbows to the head. Yeah, we'll pretty much go from there.
So that's the basic rule. No knees or elbows to the head, but everywhere else is legal. Well, obviously not the balls.
Yeah.
Using the balls.
Yeah, no nut shots, but everywhere else is all good.
All right. That's good because I don't, when I hit the bag and, you know, I try to mix in the MMA stuff now, I don't feel like I can get somebody's head that far down and knee him in the head.
Yeah, you got to work for that.
Yeah, work up to that. But like the flying is out of the question for me right now. So I don't think I can handle that. But yeah, I knee to the body all the time when I hit the bag. I got an actual bag that I kind of invented. We had a step on the beach and another speed bag and body. So I've got bungee cords on either side of it, so it's got some spring to it when you hit it. And it's good for everything.
Nice.
So I'm going to try to be doing a lot of striking in this deal, but definitely major point of weakness is going to be the rolling on the ground and the stuff I've only seen on TV and haven't really practiced.
Yeah, you gotta get your grappling and jiu-jitsu in. We had, I'd say, of the 8 fights, I think we had at least 2 or 3 submissions via, we had a guillotine, we had a rear naked choke, I believe we had a omoplata. So, you know, you definitely, you know, obviously, as we all know, fights start up top, but I definitely get at least, you know, acquainted with a few chokes, a few arm bars.
Right down the street from me, so definitely going to have to pop in there and take some classes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's totally worth it.
Tell us some of the good stories about other people that have gone this route and, you know, gone on to stick with it. And just some happy stories from some past events and since you started it, what people have done with it.
Yeah, so, you know, actually, we were just featured on, if you go to Fightland, which is part of Vice, they just launched a story about one of our fighters, Joe Muccio, today, which is great. He won via rear naked choke, but separated his shoulder. So he's been training at City Octagon for about 6 months, and you know, Philly came into the fight in great shape and was a real warrior, and it was awesome. A cool story would probably be Ryan Gruhlman, who won his first fight at Ono pretty decisively. He, you know, turned it to ground and pounded. He did full mount, and it was over pretty quick. And he's since gone on to, you know, he's done really well on a few smokers, and he's going to be fighting again on this card, 27th, against Jake Kasparowski, I believe, who also has a couple of solid fights under his belt. So it's going to be a good matchup.
Cool. And, you know, we talk about how many people in the pro circuits come out of Massachusetts. Who have you been able to get to come to some of your events for big names?
So it was funny. I mean, the first event, because I fought in it, you know, I guess there was a lot of pro and kind of high up AMI guys there. I couldn't name them. I'd have to ask my buddies, but you know, Dan Kramer's coming to this one. A good friend of mine, board member, his girlfriend is very close with Brittany Palmer and Ariani, so there's a good chance one of them might be coming out for the fight night. They won't be doing any sort of ringo work, but there's a good chance they'll be there just hanging out. We have Dan Kramer. Dan Kramer, who's fought in the UFC and in Bellator, who's coming up. He's going to make it up with a bunch of America.
Should we ask Patrick Walsh if he wants to show up?
Pat and I met a couple months ago in person, and you know, obviously he's been busy, you know, but we talked about my event, we talked about the Victory event, because you know, I don't consider my league to in any way, you know, compete with or go against, you know, at all any of the other leagues. You know, I love MMA, and I want more people to be involved in it. So, my idea is to kind of cross promote as much as possible. But you know, between the event coming up for through Victory and his whole thing with the Ultimate Fighter, obviously his time has been limited.
Yeah, it's always nice to be able to interview those guys while the show is still in progress, but at the same time, it kind of sucks because they can't tell you what happened.
exactly.
Yeah, we had a couple guys in the past, not necessarily during the show, but you know, before it aired, before the rest of it had aired, and one guy, Chuck O'Neill, actually told us one time that he had like 4 fights in 3 weeks. It was ridiculous.
What? Wow, that's crazy.
That's the one thing I don't like about that show, is that it almost treats it like amateur fights. The fights don't go on your record, and you know, you get like a week to prepare for a fight in a lot of these situations. It was really bad when they did the live version. So
yeah.
I don't know if I'd ever want to go through that. Not that the UFC would ever pick me. But
it's a hell of a process.
Yeah. But anyway, tell us what do you like most about the sport of mixed martial arts?
I think it's just it's one of the purest sports going. You know, having played a lot of different sports, you can kind of, as much as I don't admit it, you know, there's times you can kind of take plays off and you can kind of catch your breath a little bit. In MMA, you can't do that. You know, you can circle a little bit and kind of contain yourself, but, you know, the minute you kind of let your guard down is when you get beat. And, I think there's just something really pure about that. And I think, you know, unfortunately, a lot of people kind of have a real misconception for it. I think it's one of the most, in terms of, you know, competitors to competitor, I think there's tremendous amount of respect, you know, obviously not in all scenarios, but I think especially in the amateur level, and, you know, even if you break it down to, like, you know, jiu-jitsu as being a lifestyle, I think MMA itself is also getting to that point and very much a way of life for people. And there's not many sports, you know, like that. And you know, those are probably... You know, I kind of went on a tangent there, but those are some of the things I like most about it.
Right. Cool. And do you have any fighters that you watch all the time? You can't miss a fight?
You know, I love, like, you know, I like, you know, Roy Nelson's hilarious. I just think he's hilarious. I love to watch him, you know, Big Country. I've been watching the Metamora stuff, you know, grappling, BJJ stuff. I really like, you know, in terms of that, I love watching Bushesha. And this real pure jiu-jitsu stuff. In terms of, you know, MMA, you know, obviously, Jon Jones, just the way he can throw his elbows and kind of how deceiving he is, you know, he's fun to watch. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of guys. I think that's what's cool about the sport. It's really kind of changing and evolving, and you're getting guys that just have such extensive toolboxes. So it's getting more and more interesting across the board.
Yeah. And what's your ultimate goal with all this, with this company?
Yeah. You know, I want it to be a legitimate corporate fight league. You know, eventually I want CEOs fighting CEOs. I want union guys fighting union guys. I want to raise a shit ton of money for youth-based athletic organizations. You know, I'm proud to be in this country. I'm proud to be, you know, from this country. But we're getting really soft in a lot of ways. And I think wrestling, I think jiu-jitsu, I think MMA, I think all the components that really make up MMA, especially for youth, are what's going to kind of hopefully take us out of this hole, you know, just really, you know. I feel, I'm only 30 years old, but I grew up in a time that starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, I was out of the house. I was not allowed to be in the house. You know what I mean?
Now, I got a question. You were saying about how you want to get CEOs, partner CEOs, and things, you know, things like that. I had a couple CEOs from the company that I worked for that I got laid off there about 5 years ago. They were both jackasses. So can I moonlight and pretend like I was a CEO just to get in there and beat the living shit out of them?
So there's...
I was speaking my mind. We had this meeting, and I'm like, oh, those jackasses will fuck it up. I'm like, oh, the board of directors, you mean the board of dickheads? Well, they can't say that. I'm like, well, I just did. I was a little bit more crass than I am now. I'm much more mature.
I mean, there's, I would love, I'd love to see, like, kind of a low-level management guy, absolutely school, like a managing director or CEO. I mean, that would be ideal. You can imagine, it's tough. You know, it's an uphill battle to convince these people to even step to the cage. We have like a kind of, we had over, I think, perspective. I've had over 300 fighters register in the last probably 6 months, of which, we get at least 50 to 100 to attend an actual gym. And then, kind of once someone gets punched in the face, they learn pretty quick to want to do this or not. And I would say about half of them at that point say, fuck this, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that from the boxing, I've seen a lot of people just coming off the street, think, oh, yeah, I've been in a few street fights, I can handle this. And they used to always throw me in there. I went to this one gym in Quincy, Mass. There. It's probably under different management now, but right in Quincy Center. I'm pretty sure they still got another facility there. But
Trifecta.
Maybe, yeah.
Joey Coxer was there.
Down in the basement, right?
Yep.
So I used to box in there, and they'd always throw me in with the guys straight off the street. And I also boxed like a guy going on late 40s, maybe early 50s every now and then. And he was kind of interesting, but they'd always throw me in with these kids that would come in like the Tasmanian devil for the first 30 seconds, just spinning and trying to throw all kinds of punches from all kinds of weird angle, nose defense. And I wouldn't even hit him for that first 30 seconds. I'd just wait and move around, duck punches. And then they get tired. And then you start fighting into them. And the coach would always be like, all right, that's enough. Right when I was playing into them. So I've seen that kind of mentality where those guys don't come back. Even if you hit them a little sometimes, they just can't take it. They realize they're out of shape. They don't know what to do about it. Because out on the street, they do that to somebody, and it's usually somebody with no experience. Once they get messed up with somebody who's got some experience, they just go, oh, man, what did I get myself into? So I'm definitely looking forward to testing my talents, though. It'd be a little hard not to the head. I definitely will have no problems not kneeing to the head. Because you got to worry about that on the ground. Anyone can't do that on the ground in pro. Anyway, so. But anyway, what else can you tell us about this event here, New York versus Boston? Hello? Brendan still with us? Lose Brendan? We lost Brendan. Oh, no! Where is he? Okay. I was rambling. I didn't even notice we lost him.
Sorry about that, guys.
That's all right. I was rambling.
I'm so sorry.
So I was trying to ask, what else can you tell us about this Boston versus New York event? Where'd you come up with the idea, and what are your greatest hopes for that event?
I'll be honest with you, it's a fucking pain in the ass, getting guys to commit to this that have never fought before, and then B, making sure that, they're training facilities. You don't want to watch two guys that fight each other running under the same coach. What I'm really looking forward to is just, again, kind of almost like you see on the Ultimate Fighter, is like, basically the red team and the blue team working together and learning from one another, and, all of you guys kind of basically being on the same level, if you will. In terms of, I come up with the concept just like O2O, and I think I worked in New York in finance for a little bit. I think there's a real demand there. I think, Boston definitely has appreciated kind of what we're doing and appreciates what we're doing. I think New York would appreciate even more so, and I think from a marketing and kind of impact standpoint, I think we'd be able to have a show down there that raises several hundred thousand dollars and, has a real substantial, sustainable impact on, our charitable partners.
All right. And how about a little bit more about this upcoming one in Boston?
Yeah. So we're pumped up, I just did another walk through the House of Blues today with their production team, and it's going to be great. We're going to have we have 8 fights on the card, 5 of which are all 0-0 guys, so 10 fighters that have never fought before. We have we actually have a fighter that's coming up from American Top Team in Florida, Daniel Michel, who's he's actually deaf. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he's pretty good. He's a good fighter, and he'll be fighting Mike Brown, who's been training out of Combat Sports Boston, a local guy. We have really good stuff lined up.
Awesome.
So obviously open bar. The chicks will be great looking. They'll be in, tight dresses that are low cut. We got some great alcohol sponsors. We've got a lot of really cool partnerships. We have Fuel for Fire. It's a really cool supplement company. All sorts of really cool brands, and Be Positive, which is a local t-shirt apparel company.
Yeah,
be there. So
that guy, I know that guy.
Yeah, Steven.
Steve. Yeah. Good.
Yep.
Guy.
So, yeah, great. Just really, at the end of the day, we have a lot of good people involved with the organization, and that's what matters most to me and to the others that are involved, our board members and the fighters and the volunteers. So, it's going to be a really fun night. The boobs will be flowing, and the music will be great. It's going to be awesome.
Cool. Well, we definitely appreciate having you on. Is anybody you want to give a shout-out to or say a book to?
Firstly, I thank you for having me. I really appreciate you guys having me on and being able to promote and talk about the cause. I'd just like to thank our charitable partners, Ultimate Self-Defense, their MMA scholarship, and Build the Ninja, Level Ground MMA, Inner City Weightlifting, Travis Roy Foundation. All sorts of, we just have so many good people involved, and I couldn't thank them enough. And We're just really excited for June 27th at the House of Blues.
Sweet. And final thoughts? Predictions?
Final thoughts. I think we'll see, let's see here. Honestly, the fights are going to be great. I think we have Alan Ashenthalter fighting Nick Rivers. They're going to be coming in around 175, 180. They're both real strong, pound for pound athletic kids. We have Joe Pierce versus Steve Wilkie. They're both BC graduates, both big. Joe Pierce played hockey at BC. He's about 6'4", 205. Steve Wilkie's about 6'2", 205. We have some really good athletes. I think that's what surprised people last year the most is, you know, they kind of thought it was going to be a shit show and guys weren't going to, you know what to do or control their body. But the fights are really top notch. We had one of our last fight on the last card was up for Fight of the Year honors on Mass MMA and a couple other sites. So I think people will be pleasantly surprised with the caliber.
Awesome. Well, I will try to get down there so I can meet you in person. And
absolutely, you're more than welcome. I'll put you on the VIP list.
Awesome. And we'll be looking forward to it. And hopefully, I'll be down to 205 by that point.
Oh yeah, and Brendan, I have to tell you, my crystal ball is lit up. I mean, the whole room's hot now. Things are going to work out great. And I think that you'll get a few more people to help you with the managerial thing so you can put more focus on your training for the fight because, you know, there's an old cliche, fighting is a jealous mistress. And it's just, you know, I mean, and another one I've heard, you disrespect fighting, it'll disrespect you. So it's just you got to get that single-minded focus. And I can imagine how hard it is to coordinate something like this because there's always some little thing that keeps coming up to interrupt you, but I think you'll get the right people around to help out, and this is exciting. Good luck, man. Good luck.
I really appreciate that. As you can imagine, there's a lot of moving pieces, but we have great people around the organization helping. So, I couldn't agree more with you, and there's definitely going to be a lot more events to come.
All right. And by the way, talk about CEOs fighting CEOs. I did read somewhere there's a contract between the Fertitta brothers that if they ever have a disagreement they can't solve, they can fight it out in a jiu-jitsu match.
That's great.
To have an argument. Throw them in the cage for charity. Anyway, Brendan, it's been great chatting with you, and we'll keep you posted. We'll keep us posted, and we'll put everything on the websites and get it all out there for everybody to see. And we'll see if we can get down there and report on the event itself.
Awesome, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time. And like I said, I'll put you guys on the list. So, just let me know when you're coming down, and you guys will be all set.
Sure.
Awesome. Have a good night, guys.
Too.
Okay, bud.
New York sucks.
Yeah, New York sucks.
Yeah, New York sucks. I stopped in one supermarket about 15 minutes from the trip to my house. He says, getting himself a throw on the grill. I've been the kid there. I haven't seen him in a while. Thank God I haven't seen him in a while. He didn't go to one nightclub that I would go to. And he's one of the skinny guys with crooked teeth and putting the real good looking. And he always, kind of like, all the girls and nobody liked him there. The bartender didn't like him. He's just hot. He's ugly and you have an attitude. Well, he's one of those, and I'm doing my air quotes right now, diehard Yankee fan, because they won a lot of World Series. I'm like, dude, if I ask you, who guys were like way back then. I'm not talking about guys like Davies and New Derrick that everybody knows. But other like guys that baseball fans would know. He's like, huh? Who? I know Dave Jeter and A-Rod. Larry Miller was the greatest closer of all time. And he goes, he's okay. I know T.T. Sabathia is the best pitcher. I'm like, no, he's not. But he's one of those guys who's walked on these Yankee jerseys. And I just saw him and I'm like, I own a Yankee jersey because my father and my uncle grew up with Lady Jackson. Put him in a pit and strangle him with it. So that's what I'm rooting for you guys now. So that's what I'm saying. You know, when you guys, when they go down there, you Bostoners, you didn't change the arena with you, you kick their ass.
Yeah, all right. Well, I mean, I think I could drum up a fan base down there, even being from Boston, because I could always reach out to the Battle of the Badges guys.
Absolutely.
Has some New York firefighters there. That'll work in my favor. I'll be like the only Boston guy that gets cheers. That'll be funny. But actually, I was thinking of, if it wasn't so dangerous, you know, maybe I should see if one of their guys wants to go over to the MMA world with me. And then it would be kind of even, you know, boxing experience versus boxing experience, even though theirs is going to be more recent than mine. They'll still be just as new to the MMA as I am, so maybe it'll balance itself out. But it would be interesting to get them on board, too, with that whole thing, because if they're going to make a habit out of that, it would definitely be good to get a law enforcement angle in there, and maybe some military charities like Wounded Warrior. So we'll see. I think the whole organization makes sense. I like the open bar idea. Sounds like a good time for the people not fighting. And even the guys who are fighting, they can drink after the fight, I guess. As long as they're cleared medically. That's a good deal. And I'm definitely excited about it. We'll see how it goes. Maybe our next guest, Patrick Walsh, can give me a guest seminar. Next time I'm in the Massachusetts area, he's got his own gym, so give me a lesson. All right, well, we've got about 5 more minutes before we get on the line with him. I might as well go over some of those boxing results we didn't get to earlier. In addition to Miguel Cotto pulling off the big upset there on that same card, we had Wilfredo Vasquez Jr. losing to Marvin Sonsona by full decision. Rounds there. We had Andy Lee knocking out John Jackson in the fifth round. What, Tony?
That was a great knockout. Great. Left him right in there.
Jorge Melendez. Sorry, there's no records on this one. But Jorge Melendez lost to Javier Francisco Maciel by majority decision. Willie Nelson knocked out Darrell Cunningham in the first round.
Is he on the road again?
On the road again. Jose Pedraza also won over Arturo Oroz Quieta, first round TKO. Pretty interesting. Steve Forbes lost over the weekend to Emmanuel Larti. That was a unanimous decision loss there in the main event. Kind of a surprise. His nickname's Mama's Boy. Dennis Duglin, another former guest of ours, got a win over the weekend, too, down in Miami. Beat Charles Whitaker by unanimous decision. Let's see what else. We got a couple boxing or MMA stories, I think, we got to cover. But I think we've already discussed the big event. The Andre fight there this weekend. UFC and Invicta have signed a partnership now. Invicta FC will actually now air exclusively on UFC Fight Pass. UFC Fight Pass already has subscribers in over 155 countries. So that's a pretty big deal for the Invicta ladies. Looking good for them. Let's see. We covered everything else, really. No rematch between Pearson and Sanchez. Not going to happen, I guess. But, they're going to treat the whole fight as a PSN 1, according to Dana White. And they gave him $30,000 as a win bonus. That's the fight on the cards. So. That's an interesting one. Might as well go over UFC 174. Johnson versus Bogatinov is the main event. That's Demetrius Johnson, 19-2-1, and Ali Bogatinov, 13-2. I think this is going to be a repeat of what Henderson just showed us, except Demetrius might take 5 rounds to do it. But I don't see anybody beating him in a long time. He just has that awkward, basic style and just all the tools to beat you up. So I don't think your crystal ball would show much difference, Tom.
Yeah.
Just that kind of
I
bad.
Agree.
Then we've got what could be the more interesting fight on the night. And what could be the most exciting fight. We've got Tyron Woodley. Rory McDonald, both of them have only 2 losses. McDonald has 16 wins. Woodley has 13. But both just unbelievably good fighters. And they just come at you with totally different styles. And they definitely are aggressive, both of them. So I'm looking forward to how that one pans out. And Ryan Bader is back. He's 16-4. Fighting Rafael Cavalcante, who's 12-4. So they're definitely matching these guys up well in terms of losses. Anyway, exact same losses here. A little more fight experience for Bader and Rory, but both of these fights very evenly matched. And then we have Andre Arlovski in what hopefully is not a freak show bout. He's 21-10, coming back. UFC for the first time in a long time, fighting Brandon Chow, who's 10-3. Chow really hasn't got into the title picture. He's been scrapping. He's been up and down, but this Arlovski fight is, I think, a good test for both guys. I don't think Arlovski is going to be one and done if he loses, but Chab is looking at a couple of losses in a row. Might be the end of his UFC career, so keep an eye on both of these guys. We've got Ryan Chimo, 19-3, fighting Ovince St. Pro, who's 15-5. Kichi Kunimoto, 16-5-2, versus Daniel Sarafian, who's 8-4. Eve Jaboen, who's 19-9, fighting Mike Easton. Cajun Johnson, 19-10-1, fighting Tai Jin Bang, who's 16-8. And Elizabeth Phillips, 4-1, versus Valerie Letourneau, who's 5-3. Roland Delorme, who's 9-2, fighting Michinori Tanaka, who's undefeated at 9-0. And the first fight of the night is Jason Sago, 9-1, fighting Josh Shockley, 11-2. Now, we need to add our next guest, Patrick Wolf. And fulfilled his demands. But now that means you have to ask questions, Tom. So. I can get him to show up here. Are you with us still, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And by the way, Patrick Walsh is going to be facing Corey Anderson in the semifinal fight, which is to decide who fights in the finale. So, right on the cusp. And unfortunately, they do sign these big confidentiality agreements, so I don't think we're going to be able to get Pat's...
Yeah, I wouldn't even ask.
Pat Walsh.
Hey, Pat, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
It's going well. How about yourself?
Good. We also have a boxing guy, Tony the Tornado Pentacal, on the line, and psychic Tom Padgett.
What's up?
How you doing, Pat?
Doing well. Doing real well.
All right, so obviously, you've, from what we know of so far, you've done pretty well on the show. You've got two good wins when you get in the house, when in the house. As much as you can talk about to get to that point.
I'm sorry, you cut out a little bit there.
What was that whole experience like on the show, getting to that point of, you know,
geez, just, I mean, it's mainly just living with 15 other alpha males. It's definitely an experience. You're surrounded by a bunch of different personalities, and it's trying to cope and commingle with, you know, with a bunch of other guys that you might fight. It's definitely something that's an experience, to say the least.
Now, the latest episode, we see a lot of Dana White ripping guys apart for not fighting. What was that like to deal with? Knowing, you know, he's never had a fight in his life coming at you like that. It's tough to take.
You know, I can completely understand Dana White's angle. He's a business person. He's trying to sell entertainment. I mean, we're all out there to fight, but people are paying for entertainment. They want to see a good show. So I completely agree with Dana White wanting good fights, wanting hard-fought fights, and really showing that we all want to be there. Myself, I finished my first opponent, and then Anton, I mean, I went all out. I thought I was aggressive. I moved forward. I had some highlights in there. And you know, I thought that performance was decent. So, you know, Dana really didn't rip me apart too much. He mainly talked about the finish bonuses, you know, and the money that was still out there. So it wasn't too bad. I completely agree that the fights thus far have not been over the top. And, you know, I'm excited to see things improve.
But, Pat, I never got the feeling that Dana had you in mind, because I hate to be jumping the gun on things, but your fight with Anton was, man, I'm telling you, I had some people over, and we were really pulling for you for a few reasons, and one of them was from that decision from the week before. And, you know, we were really hoping things would kind of even up here. And I know you sure didn't have a cheap date. I mean, Anton looked very intimidating. And early on, when he got your back, like in, you know, the first part of the first round, things were looking a little bad, but you really kept your cool. I'm so impressed with you. I mean, congratulations on the job you did there. And so what was going through your head there early on in the fight? Did you think that things were going a little bad there at first, or you always felt like you were in control?
I appreciate the good words, but yeah, I mean, I just stayed calm. The worst thing you can do is when you have a jiu-jitsu black belt on your back is to freak out. I stayed calm, I stayed relaxed, and just kept my head in the game. You know, I definitely was conscious of the fact that I was losing the fight for the first 3 minutes of the first round, but it's all about coming back and pushing through. I knew if I could grind him out that match was mine, so I just kept pushing through. There was no point in my, you know, during the fight where I didn't think I was going to win. You know, it was just a situation where I was caught in a bad position. You know, I was actually, I was clipped early on and he had me and he was, you know, he was grappling very well. And it just took me a minute to compose myself and to move forward.
Well, you know, Pat, there's an old cliche that at a higher level, fighting is about three quarters mental. And if you don't master the mental aspect of the game, all the technique in the world flies out the window. And I mean, I think your conditioning was superb. And what I really liked in the first round is after the first couple minutes when he couldn't finish and you got back to your feet and you kind of had this little smile like, okay, my turn now. You know, I mean, I don't know if you were thinking that, but that's almost kind of like, okay, is that what you got? You know? Go ahead. And I had a few friends over, and man, I'm telling you, this, the house was shaking. Everyone was cheering for you so much in that. It was just, maybe the best fight of the year so far in the house, I think.
I appreciate that. And you know, coming up, and it's one of those game faces you have to have. You know, I went through. I think Anton gave me everything he had in the first 3 minutes. He showed me jiu-jitsu. He showed me a little striking. He threw some kicks. But, you know, there was nothing that was bothering me. His jiu-jitsu didn't bother me. You know, I'm a high-level grappler. I'm a wrestler. His jiu-jitsu didn't bother me. I didn't think that I was in too much of a of a risk of getting submitted at any point during that fight. And then his strikes, you know what? He had good striking, but it definitely didn't bother me. You know, I wasn't getting clipped. I wasn't taking damage. So, yeah, smirking and kind of brushing things off was just my way of saying that you need a little bit more of that to take me out.
Yeah, and when you came out for the second round, yeah, your cardio looked good. And did you feel some of his power was leaving then? Did you kind of sense he was starting to gas a bit?
I smelt a little blood. I mean, it was just the fact that, you know, he was no longer as confident as he was in the first round. You know,
right.
He started being timid. He was starting to think about my strikes. And that's where I got a little bit more confident. We felt each other out, and I just felt like the more dominant athlete. And just move forward and you know, kind of have my way with him the next two rounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you were aware of the fact that you needed to set up the takedowns, you know, throwing a few punches coming in, because a lot of times guys from a pure wrestling background forget that part of it. You know, at the level you're at now, you can't just bum rush someone and get them down. You got to set it up, but I think you've been working good on that too. Very impressed with that.
Thank you, thank you. I throw some looping punches, and I know how to throw straight punches. I know how to box, but throwing my looping punches, it really sets up my takedown. I get people worried about my hands, and it allows me to get in. And keeping my hands a little bit low, I'm ready for someone to counter me to move and penetrate in. So that's my style. It's something I'm really good at. My timing is definitely something that defines me.
Yeah. Well, exactly. I mean, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I think right now you got it going good. I mean, you can always refine things. I mean, every day I'm sure you're in the gym working on getting better. But the way you're doing it, I like your strategy. I like your tactics. And I just really like your mindset. So great things in the future, for sure.
I appreciate that.
This is Tony. I'm Mike Dean Boxing on the show here. And I got a question for you. The Ultimate Fighter, which has been around for a good number of years now, and I have the popularity for that show really hasn't waned. It's stayed consistent. And then you had boxing reality shows that came out about now. We're going back to 8 or 9 years ago. You had The Next Great Champ, which really flopped, and then you had The Contender, which had a strong first year, but the follow-up years really tanked. What do you think has set The Ultimate Fighter a reality show that has been successful as opposed to a boxing reality show, which in turn was not successful?
It's tough. I mean, you had that first season. The first season with the finale. You just had so many fans from that one fight, and I think everyone still remembers. I think that we have a huge following from that first season of The Ultimate Fighter, and then seeing so many greats come out of The Ultimate Fighter, really made a difference. The Ultimate Fighter is now a feeder program. You know, it's evolved. It's not just the drama it was the years prior. It is now, you know, high-level athletes, you know, looking to make some big noise in UFC, you know? I mean, the people that were just casted kind of, you know, some prospects, some reality stars, some different personalities. Now they're throwing, you know, I'd like to think the best athletes and the best fighters onto the show and seeing what turns out. And there's still, you know, there's still that little bit of drama. There's still the entertainment, but you also get the high-quality athletes that move forward. So I think that has a lot to do with the success, the fact that it evolves.
Less wall-smashing and house-destroying and more fighting now.
Definitely. A little bit less.
When they first came in as a contender, I mean, what I thought really hurt the show, I thought it was a great concept to put you guys all in the same house. But what I thought really hurt that show, we didn't even talk about people trying to decide all that nonsense. But they built the show so much around, like, the guys doing these little trainings here and little trainings there and Stallone showing up at the gym. Hey, I'm a silly guy. I love wrestling. I watched a lot of movies. I was in the text of one of them. It's not real. And there's a Sugar Ray Leonard on there, which I thought was great. But what they were showing these people were 50 minutes of, you know, the guys and doing their little trainings and talking and pointing fingers at each other and this guy's family. And then they only showed like 10 minutes of the actual fight. And a lot of it looked like it was made by movie. You had two guys that didn't hit each other, and they would show the same sequence of punches three times. And then they'd be editing it, and they'd do it in slow motion. So it didn't look like an actual real boxing match. It looked like a movie. And then when they finally got to the finale, and they aired it live, and they had so many people that were tuning into it, and they showed them an actual boxing match. Now, I know there are a lot of fans that can appreciate boxing. I am a boxing diehard. Love it. But most of the people that are watching the show, watching the final fight, it wasn't that good. They had the horrible commentary, by Stallone and Leonard, which I thought really hurt it. It wasn't a good fight. And then the people that got all these highlights for like 9 straight weeks came to the 10th week and they didn't see what they were expecting. And I thought that really hurt the show. They built it so much like a scripted movie, and then they showed an actual fight that wasn't good. And I thought that really hurt that show's popularity.
Now, Patrick, as far as this season, what do you think about the coaches? We obviously had a situation last season with the coaches really seemed to, one coach in particular, Rousey, really hated the other. But it seems like Frankie and BJ really do kind of get along.
Yeah, it's interesting. They have so much respect for each other, and I have so much respect for those coaches. BJ Penn and Frankie Edgar, those are both idols of mine. Frankie Edgar, I was glad to be on Frankie's team. He was definitely my choice, being a wrestler and a striker. He was the person I wanted. But then BJ Penn, he's the Hall of Famer. He's the best guy. You know, he's one of my favorite fighters growing up. And it's just, it's something, he's just such a nice guy and a genuine person. And that's how fighting should be. Those are, you know, the over-the-top competitors. Yeah, that's a little ridiculous. I love the fact that Frankie Edgar and BJ Penn both have a lot of respect for each other.
Professionals.
Yeah.
True professionals.
Definitely
a given that they'll shake hands after their fight, right?
definitely.
Like Rousey and Kate there. But also, you come from the Boston area there. Tell us a little bit about coming up in that scene and being around some of the big names in the sport. I know you just were recently training with another former guest of ours, John Howard. Met him in person a few years ago. He's a great guy. But tell us a little bit about the scene down there.
Well, me and John Howard, we come from the same camp. I actually started with Y Crew. I have been since opened my own gym. But me and John Howard, man, the first day I walked into an MMA gym, John Howard was there working out. So he was telling that it took me under his wing. I mean, he was already there. He was in the UFC when I first started getting an MMA. And, you know, I just kind of took it as that's the person that is where I want to be. He knows the road that I need to follow. So, you know, being from the Boston area, having other people that have done well, Massachusetts, we have a decent lot of fighters in the UFC. We had Kenny Florian, Joe Lozon, John Howard. We had some guys that made a little noise, you know, in the UFC. So being close with someone that was already there really gave me some confidence. You know, going grappling with them and doing pretty well at a young age, that gave me some confidence, you know. And then seeing him go and kick some butt at the big show, it was a really cool experience.
Yeah, he's a nice guy and just a total gentleman and, you know, the way he came back, too, was pretty impressive because, you know, you usually don't get second chances with the UFC unless you do really well outside of it. So he went and put the work in and got back in, and I was very proud of that for him, you know. Great on his part. But tell us about your gym. What's going on with this gym?
Victory Combat Academy. You know, I opened up this gym about 4 or 5 months ago. It was a situation where, you know, sadly in Boston, there's a decent amount of fighters, but there wasn't a close place for me to train. The travel into Boston, out of Boston, it was just rough. I was still working a full-time job, and, you know, I had some. I have a great support group. I have a great group of guys around me, and, you know, we all kind of pooled our resources together and put up a gym right in my hometown. So it's great that I could, you know, go for a jog and show up at my gym if I want and be able to train and not have that hassle of a long travel. I still... I still cross train. I still train with a bunch of other camps, a bunch of other fighters, and work out different gyms. But, you know, having a home base that's close to you is really important. Someone once told me that the best gym in the world is the one you can get to every day. And luckily, it's the one I own.
That's cool. That's definitely cool. And what do you love most about the sport of mixed martial arts?
What do I love about it? I would have to say the fact that it's pure competition. I played football. I ran track. I did a couple other sports. No, so I can go out there. I can try my best. I can do real well. And we'll still lose a game. You know, I started wrestling. It's an individual sport. If you have success, people see that success. If you lose, if you screw up, people see that. So just that kind of pressure, that pure competitiveness, you know, of being one-on-one with someone, it's something that I'm just addicted to. I love that individual competition.
Yeah. Well, it's nice that you say that, so I'm about to get addicted to it myself. Just get addicted to it. I just got off the phone with a guy who said he met you a little while back, Brendan McKee, who started that Office to Octagon program.
Oh, he's a great guy. We had lunch a few months ago.
Yeah, so I'm signing on for his New York versus Boston rivalry show. I've done some amateur boxing, but never amateur MMA. And I mentioned to you that I've done some wrestling, but this is going to be my first amateur MMA experience, so hopefully I get addicted like you.
Oh, okay. Congratulations. That's a great thing. You know, someone like myself, I was pretty good at wrestling. I was pretty confident. I was an athlete. And I was good. I was actually good at MMA before I really started fighting. You know, I was just naturally athletic. I think it takes more courage to get into MMA when you're not that good. When you're just kind of, you know, when you're a regular person, you know, you're not a D1 athlete. You know, you're not an athletic phenom. It takes so much courage to go into a cage when you're not, you know, when you're not winning every exchange in your hometown gym. So, you know, the regular people out there that are pursuing their goals and getting into a cage, especially people, you know, going Office to Octagon, people that are raising money for charities. I mean, that's just such a great thing there. And, you know, that's so much more courageous than what I'm doing where, you know, I consider myself a high-level fighter before the show and going up there. So for me, it wasn't too bad. I competed a lot. But someone that never competed, that stepped into a cage in front of thousands of people, that's something that's a lot more impressive than what I do.
Well, the way I see it, you know, I can't be walking around like Dana White having no fight experience talking about how bad this guy does. You know, I like some things about Dana White, but that's one thing. I wish he had some fighting experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with the show. I mean, this is another question we can get into. We had Chuck O'Neill on the show back when, a little while after he was on. The Ultimate Fighter, and he's a New England guy. He's from New Hampshire, Maine area, and he talked about how difficult it is physically to go through that, and it's probably one of the number one reasons why you guys don't have your fights go on your records for this tournament. But how was that experience, having to fight so soon, you know, one after another? Not used to it.
You know, speaking of Chuck O'Neill, me and him were punching each other in the face last night. Me and him just had a good sparring session in just last night. So it's kind of funny you bring him up. His experience was intense. If I remember this correctly, he had won his first fight. I think he might have lost his second, and then he got brought back onto the show. I mean, he had to make weight like 5 times in 6 weeks or something crazy like that. I mean, that is just a huge drain. You know, you're fighting hard fights. I think Dana was complaining about Spong versus Todd Monahan and the fact that Daniel Spong, you know, kind of just took him down, held position, and won the fight. He was complaining, but some of these guys, if you all out in the quarterfinals, you know, your first fight in the house, and you break your hand, you break your nose, you screw up yourself the rest of the show. You know, people can't come back from that stuff. So, you know, it's really tough when you have that many fights, especially when they're three-rounders, tough fights, and, you know, you don't go through and just dominate someone or finish them. It's just something it's really tough. I mean, I know myself, I was a little beat up from Anton. You know, those little leg kicks, I mean, I was smiling, I laughed them off, but my leg was a little purple the next day. You know, it's definitely something that will affect you. For me, I love training, I love going hard, I love banging, so it didn't bother me, but some people don't take damage as well as I do
It takes him a long time to recover. So it would definitely affect you. For myself, I mean, I would live in that house and I would fight like that, you know, every day of my life if I could. It was something I really enjoyed. But I can completely understand how some people, you know, need a break and feel like it really really affects them being in the house and fighting and making weight that many times in such a short period.
Yeah, some people are built better than others. I remember early in the season they were talking about trying to make sure you didn't have a fight right away because of your back. Sometimes, you know, it's just the right timing. You end up getting the break. You know, I worry sometimes about the safety of that whole thing, whether it's if there's any way to extend it a little bit so that guys don't get in those situations. They at least maybe get a couple weeks between fights. But I guess they keep you to a tight schedule down there, up there in Vegas.
Yep, and I do believe Chuck O'Neill told me this, that sometimes on the Ultimate Fighter, rarely the best fighter wins. It's a person that stays healthy and is smart and takes care of their body the most. You know, so
that's Dana White doesn't get too is that it's the nature of the beast that she's created. Number one, you've got coaches making these fights, not matchmakers, up to the semifinals, which he decided. But you're obviously as a coach, you're trying to get a mismatch, so you're going to have bad fights because of that. Number two, you're going to have a strategy set up, kind of like the Survivor show. When that first started, nobody had a survival strategy, but now everybody's got their own little strategies. And, you know, the weirdest people win sometimes because they stay under the radar or, you know, they just don't attract enough attention from the opposing coach to think he's dangerous. You know, I look at a guy like Kelvin Gastelum. Nobody thought he was going to win at the beginning. I can remember seeing him in the hotel room and thinking he's going to lose his first fight. And he goes and wins the whole thing. So I actually consider your character more like his, where, you know, he didn't expect he was going to blow through everybody. So you watch the first and you go, man, that guy is good.
I mean, you know, he's someone that I definitely idolize. You know, he was definitely the underdog going in. I believe he was the last pick his season. So that's definitely, you know, one of the most impressive things you'll see in the Ultimate Fighter, the last pick going through and winning the whole show. But yeah, you know, he's a wrestler, he's a tough guy, and he got better. I think that was the biggest thing. He kept getting better during the season. He actually came and visited us in the house. It was really a pleasure to meet him.
Yeah, he's from right in that area, too, New Mexico, I think.
Yeah,
over the border.
Cool.
Yeah, for such a young guy, I was really impressed with him, too. And I actually got to interview a bunch of guys from that season, so... I was very intrigued by that whole dynamic and how he came out of it. And, you know, it's one of the first times they actually leaked the first couple episodes before they aired it to the media. They gave us a season.
Really?
The first couple episodes. So I was like, wow, you know, I got to do something with this package. I'm getting early news. So I started pitching ideas to magazines, and then they published a couple of the interviews that I did. So that was interesting. But the show has grown so much. Talk about that. I'm obviously you're a fan. You sound like you've watched a lot of the past episodes and series. What do you think about how far it's come as a show?
I mean, it's big time. It's now on Fox Sports 1. I mean, that's huge. I mean, you know, Spike TV, that was the only reason I ever watched Spike TV was that, and I don't know, I remember catching a couple of sci-fi movies or something. But it's something that, you know, we're now on, you know, every UFC fight, you end up seeing an Ultimate Fighter preview, you know, in the next episode or something. It's definitely grown tremendously. It's an investment for the UFC. It's something that's going to keep keeping the publicity going and keeping all the fighters coming back. It's something that keeps growing, and it's great for the sport.
Now, I know I probably asked this from a couple other contestants in the past, but what's that moment like when, you know, you've already done the show and you're just getting ready for that first influx of overnight fame when it airs for the first time? And, you know, is there like a lead up to that? Is it all of a sudden, or, I mean, is it gradual, or all of a sudden you just wake up the next day and your Twitter's blowing up? all that stuff? Does it get hectic, or is it pretty manageable?
You know, it's definitely a little weird going to the subway in my hometown and having a bunch of people point me out and, you know, stop to talk to me. That's definitely something new and a little surprising. But yeah, it kind of gradually increased. You know, the first episode was a huge influx. I mean, a ton of publicity. And then it kind of, you know, not really died down, but kept, you know, just kind of slowed down a little bit. And then after I fought, you know, when I was fighting my next fight, going through Anton, and then I won, it definitely had a huge wave of media, you know, just going through me. So it's something that's cool. I'm not too, you know, it's not too much of a change in my life. I'm a high school wrestling coach. I'm used to being social and kind of being a public eye. You know, I was a professional fighter before I got on the show. So I'm kind of used to some media, but this is definitely exponential right now.
Awesome. And obviously you can't tell us what happens on the show, but overall, looking back, what was the experience like for you generally?
Again, I would do it again in a blink of an eye. You know, getting paid a weekly stipend to train, free food, all you can eat with the best coaching staff in the world, sign me up. So, you know, just a great experience. You know, I met a lot of cool people. I made some friends. And just really, really enjoyed myself. And I stayed professional. I understood that the actions I was making, you know, the actions I took and the decisions I made on the show would affect me for the rest of my life. So, you know, I was pretty conscious of that. So I kind of stayed focused, stayed on task, and just kept looking towards that goal. And that, you know, of course, like everyone else, would be the ultimate fighter.
Yeah, it seemed like the only drama you were involved in was a little bit of the back and forth with the name calling. Calling you Fat Pat, but you just let that roll right off your back, right?
No, I shake that stuff off. I mean, people are looking to the point to, you know, make a little fun. Doesn't bother me none. I mean, you know, I'm a professional fighter and I don't have a six pack. You know, it's not the worst thing. I mean, I still do all right if I go up to bars, so it doesn't bother me none.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Anyway. So what's your ultimate goal with all this, with the sport?
My ultimate goal is to, you know, to have a successful string chain of gyms, to be a UFC world champion, and also to run a promotion myself.
Wow. That's the trifecta.
Yep, the trifecta. I want a chain of gyms, I want my own fight promotion, and I want to be a world champion for the UFC. So, you know, nothing too much. Definitely not asking too much there. But but you know, that thing and a beautiful wife that can cook and clean.
Oh,
you know, not as much gas for.
That's doable. It's doable though. You know, that's the thing about the
I have a better chance at the world championship in the UFC.
Yeah. you know, you look at the Ultimate Fighter, like you said, how far it's come. It's possible for you to get that going because of, you know, that opportunity that lights a spark that feeds the fire for a lifetime. So
I agree.
Great place to land. And what's been your greatest moment in the sport up to this point before you got onto the Ultimate Fighter?
Jeez, I had a 32 second knockout my first professional fight. I probably had every friend and family at that fight, and I had a 32 second knockout. That was pretty cool. You know, I went pretty hard, and I think that was one of the best moments. I've had some other success. I won the Mundi Isles last year, which is a pretty big jiu-jitsu tournament. And of course, you know, I had a state champion this year when I coached high school wrestling. That was a pretty cool accomplishment. You know, that's something that wasn't me doing individually, but definitely vicariously when you go through and coach like that.
Yeah, I had a state champion throw me around once, but didn't become one. I became a JV state champ one year before my senior. That was pretty cool.
With regards to the 52-second knockout, if I can paraphrase the late great Testamato, the replacement of going one of the games for 8 seconds. 32 seconds, what took you so long?
But, what's on the agenda here for you in the near future? Anything you can tell us about or share with us?
Not too much. You know, I have a chance to go down to New Jersey. I trained with Frankie a little bit. I know I had a couple teammates down there. You know, Ian Stevens, he did lose his first fight in the house, but that kid's still training. He's still training like a beast. You know, he's still, and I thought he was going to win the show. You know, I know he's going to take a fight pretty soon. You know, I think it's that. It's just about staying healthy, training, and waiting for the next opportunity. So whether or not, you know, people fight in finale or what, it's about, you know, even if you didn't win your first fight, still about training and waiting for that next opportunity. So, you know, nothing I can personally talk about, but I'm always training. Doesn't matter win or lose, it's a lifestyle.
And what about that whole controversy with that fight? What did you think about that, being right there in the room when all that unfolded?
With Ian Stevens getting robbed?
Yeah.
I felt like Ian Stevens was at gunpoint, and I wasn't able to help him. You know, it was something that, you know, so blatantly being robbed there and not being able to help your teammate, it was very frustrating. Dana White was right when he talked about there was a riot. It was about to bust out. We wanted to jump in the cage and you know, and stalk the terrible robbery that was happening. And I was shocked.
Yeah, you know, and then we were talking about it the next week that you know, there was no defense on was it Zapata in that fight?
Yep, Roger Zapata.
I mean, you know wrestling. The easiest thing to learn is, you know, how to get out of wrist control in wrestling. And Zapata wasn't doing anything to try to get out of wrist control or move around on the bottom. And you know, I don't know how they could have scored points for him in that.
Well, apparently the judges get points for trying to escape back control, you know, to defending rear naked chokes is how Roger Zapata apparently scored all his points. Because that's all I saw in that fight.
And
yeah,
I noticed,
exactly.
Gusty didn't show up in the cage after that, as far as I can see. They brought her in real quick.
You know,
so,
Patrick, one thing I wanted to ask you was, you know, we're seeing a lot more decisions lately than we did in the old days. I mean, I'm an old guy, and I go back to UFC 1, and back then the whole idea of decisions, there's two words, yeah, right. You know, but now the sport's evolved so much that we're seeing a lot more decisions. And some of these judges, I mean, I don't have to mention anything in particular. I mean, you can just look at last weekend. I mean, you kind of scratch your head and think, you know, now, do you think, what would you do if you could be in charge of things to really ensure that we get some fair, competent judges? Or do you think there's anything you could do?
Yeah, I would have criteria to be a judge. You need to be belted up in jiu-jitsu. You need to have some sort of martial art experience, taekwondo, anything that gets you to grasp the concept of point scoring. The fact that none of these judges have ever touched a mat drives me nuts. You know, I feel like they just, you know, they're like, I don't know, he hit the other guy a little bit more than he hit him. Let's just circle a name. I don't know how it even works. But obviously these judges don't have, you know, the martial art experience that they need to have. So some sort of criteria that says a judge needs to have a certain amount of experience would definitely be a good start.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see them well-rounded, because if you have a judge that would come from a stand-up background primarily, they may favor the stand-up fighter, or the other way around. You know, you have a judge who was a lot better on the ground, that they may be a little biased toward the grappler. So I'd like to see that balance. That would be one thing. And I'd like to see the State Athletic Commission be a little more strict on some of these judges that seem to need eyeglasses or just need an optometrist or something. So,
yeah. Maybe fewer fights decided by all three judges going, let's just circle a name, right?
Yeah, geez.
Exhibition, you know, that sucks to have a fight decided that way. Let's just circle
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, you put your heart and soul into this. people that don't even that don't train, let alone fight, have no idea what a fighter goes through. I mean, what drew me into this stuff years ago was I didn't want to work. I didn't want to get a job. It looked easy. And there's nothing, I found out very quick, there's nothing harder, there's no harder work than a fighter in training. And it's not just the physical thing, it's the technique, it's the emotions, the passion, it's the eating right. You know what I'm saying. And when you put everything you have into it, to have it robbed, just taken away, it's like, my God, I mean, it can destroy your career.
All right, Pat, well, we're running out of time here. Anybody you want to thank and give a shout-out to, say hello to out there?
You know, I just would like to thank, you know, Frank Yeager's coaching staff, Ricardo Almeida, Mark Henry, and then, of course, Frankie for letting me come and train this week. It was definitely something I enjoyed and, you know, definitely good preparation for my my own career. So I'd love to thank them and just, you know, everyone in Massachusetts, all my training partners, for getting me to where I'm at. So those are the people that really support me, and, of course, my friends and family.
And how do people find you out there in cyberspace? You got a website for your gym or Facebook pages, anything like that?
At PatWalshMMA.com. My Twitter is PatWalshMMA. And VictoryCombatSports.com is how you find my gym. And, you know, it's definitely something people should come check out.
Sweet. And I'm going to probably be trying to get down there for that Office to Octagon show. I don't know if you're going to make an appearance, but it would be cool to see you there for that.
I'll definitely be there just about every fight promotion in Massachusetts.
Sweet. All right. Well, it's been great talking to you, and you've been a fabulous guest. It's always good to get that little insight into this, how that's pulsed, because it's one thing to see it after it's been edited, but to get the inside story is always really been much better, I think.
Agreed.
The guy that was there, especially from a guy that's from my old stomping grounds there in Massachusetts. It always feels good to see somebody go far from my old neck of the woods.
Good. I appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Keep up the good work, and we'll be keeping an eye on you and keeping in touch for sure.
Good luck, Pat.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye-bye.
There you have it, Patrick Walsh, the next UFC champion.
Yes, sir. That is a young man on the move.
Who knows if it'd be before or after he finds his beautiful wife who cooks and cleans. But, wish him luck either way. That's awesome. And it sounds like, you know, he's definitely going to be looking for a fight on that finale card, whether it's, you know, he's going to be the main fight or not. We don't know, but... I think he's going to be one of those guys that sticks around for a long time, regardless of whether he goes out to that event as one of the champions or just one of the supporting cast fights. He's definitely got the right mindset, the lofty goals. It's always good to have that. Usually when we ask a guy or a girl, you know, what's your ultimate goal, it's like, oh, I want the belt. But he wants the belt, the whole chain of gyms.
And his own promotion.
And his own promotion, too.
Yeah.
That's not hard to do, though, especially in the New England area. I think that's a great breeding ground, like he said, you know, for big names and just fans in general. So I don't think he's going to have any trouble with that. There are a lot of promotions out there already in the Mass area. You know, we talked to a guy, John Ruiz, who just started one, so we know that. But, you know, you get the right people behind it, people with UFC experience, and, you know, all those other organizations are going to be in trouble when he gets involved. They call him the Beast of the East. He actually has most of his fights at heavyweight. Anyway, that's about all we've got. Until next week. come back with another guest, at least one guest. It's rare that we have two guests, but it actually was kind of a slow news week.
Tony, what do you think about Algeri? Does he have a chance? What do you think?
I like Chris Algeri. I think he's a talented fighter. He actually shocked me a few months ago on ESPN when he had an upset win. I really was shocked about how talented he is. But he's probably the guy that, a bulldog, a guy that's, relentless. And that's the question is, Algeri, with his talent, with his skill, can he hold off a guy that acts more hard as Provodnikov does? Does he have the experience to stand up to it, and what happens when he gets hurt? And I think that's going to be the question. We know what Provodnikov can do when he gets hurt, and we don't know what Algeri can do.
Well, I guess we'll find out.
But if what I said last week in post doesn't do nothing anymore.
All right, well, until next week.
All right,
that's
guys.
I have no set guest yet, but I think I'm going to try to get Reggie Johnson back on the show. So I'm sure that'll get Tony going. No questions. All right.
Okay, enjoy the fights this weekend. Over and out.
Thanks for stopping.